I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, however you choose to identify, you have picked a great day to listen to Biscuits Calling a Hockey Podcast, the number one Ottawa Senators podcast on the internet. Don't know if that's true, can't confirm that, but I'm Dave Lozo, and I'm here with the man, the myth, the legend. I'm not here with him, actually. I'm nowhere near you. Where are you? Where are you right now?
I am sitting in my dining room. Slash the Vice Sports Canadian head office. And I'm just looking out the window to see if I can see any Ottawa Senators zipping by on their way out of town. Because
any moving trucks?
I have not seen any yet. I was expecting more just guys sprinting, maybe dragging a hockey bag, and figure the rest out later. It's been a busy morning.
It's been a busy... We were kind of on a bad run here at the Biscuits Colon, because every time we got done recording the last couple of weeks, something happened. And the worst thing happened last week, because right after we got done, that's when all the Mike Hoffman, Erik Karlsson, girlfriend, cyberbullying stuff happened. And it hurt me physically, because, you know, if we miss like a Rick Nash trade to Boston, hey, we're not a Boston Bruins podcast. We're not a New York Rangers podcast. We're an Ottawa Senators podcast. And we missed the biggest Ottawa Senators news by far of the year. And now we're here, luckily, hours after Mike Hoffman was traded, not once but twice, an untradeable asset, a toxic asset. Two teams were like, I'll take him for at least an hour, no longer than an hour, but at least an hour. And then another team said, hey, yes, we'll take him as well for the next 2 years. And I got to tell you, Pierre Dorion, I know he wasn't really in a good spot here. I know he wasn't going to get a top prospect in a first, but feels like he kind of, to borrow a line from the classic comedy Horrible Bosses, it looks like he kind of got bent over a barrel and shown the 50 states and maybe and perhaps most of the provinces in Canada, because he's now in the division, and that apparently the whole thing was to not trade him within the division. And now, I don't know why that was a thing, but now he's in the division and he's got Michael Bodker for 2 years. I don't know. It seems bad. It seems bad to me, my friend.
So here's the deal. First of all, we should point out, we in response to last week's debacle, we made the decision to record today's podcast slightly later, just in case the Ottawa Senators tried to pull the same thing on us. And sure enough, they did.
They sure did.
Haha, nice try, Ottawa, but we were in. And so we should timestamp this. We are recording this. It is noon on Tuesday. So if anything big happened on Tuesday, like after noon, that we don't mention, don't yell at us. It's not because we don't like your favorite team. It's because we can only do with stuff that has already happened. And yeah, I had my take all ready to go on the first Mike Hoffman trade, the trade between the Senators and the Sharks. And my take was basically that, obviously, just from a hockey perspective, it's a bad deal for Ottawa. It's a terrible deal. They didn't get anywhere near fair value. I think plenty of us have spent... I mean, there have been Hoffman trade rumors all year long, and many of us were kind of scratching our heads as to why that would be, given that, you know, we're dealing with a pretty good player, pretty reasonable contract, all of those things. Last week's news about the situation with Erik Karlsson probably shed some light on on where those rumors might have been coming from.
Yeah.
But from a hockey perspective, I mean, Mikhail Bodker is I mean, we could probably argue over whether that's a valuable asset to get back or whether it's just a bad contract. Didn't really get much of anything. But my take was going to be, look, we all know that the news about Mike Hoffman and his fiance and the Carlsons torpedoed his value. We all knew that was going to be the case. And I was going to defend Pierre Dorion to say, look, everybody in the league knew that they were going to have to trade Mike Hoffman. If this is the best offer they got, then that's the best that they could do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had to move him. You wanted to move him quickly, preferably before you sit down and negotiate with Erik Karlsson on, you know, if that even happens. So you take what you can get. And I was going to say, look, clearly this is the best they could get. And then an hour later, Doug Wilson goes out and gets better than that for the exact same player. So, there's been speculation that maybe Pierre Dorion didn't want to trade within the division. Dale Talon, I guess, has said that the Senators did contact him about Mike Hoffman, but that was a week ago. The price was too high. They didn't get into the draft pick scenario that ended up happening. So whether Ottawa didn't circle back because it was within the division or whether they just felt like the first conversations went poorly enough that there wasn't any point. This doesn't look good for Ottawa because now he's in the division. The Sharks got more for him than the Senators did. It just doesn't work out well, even when you factor in that the guy's value was shot and that every GM in the league knew you had to trade him. You still, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the weird thing about the division thing is that I think Hoffman has two more years left on his deal. That's it. And I don't know what Pierre Dorion thinks about his Ottawa Senators over the next 2 years, but they're probably not contending for anything. So it's not as though having Mike Hoffman play five games at most against you over the next two seasons, so 10 games total, assuming Mike Hoffman doesn't get traded again in the next 42 minutes. I don't know why that would be such a... Like, I understand, like, maybe you don't want to trade Erik Karlsson in your division. You don't want to trade Erik Karlsson to Tampa or Toronto, you know, even though he has 1 year left, because maybe he gets an extension there, and then you got to go against him. Like, right. Okay,
I can see
that.
You face him in the playoffs 5 years later. Yeah.
Right, I can see that. But I think the only real consideration was the money, because apparently the contract swaps were not that much of a difference in terms of cap hit, but of course Ottawa's looking to save money in terms of dollars, and this deal saves them a lot of money. And now, in theory, I don't know what Erik Karlsson would do this for, but now Ottawa can really, really, really back up the truck to keep Erik Karlsson. I don't know why in the world he would stay. I don't know why more players on the Ottawa Senators aren't like, wait, the way to get out of here is to cyberbully someone on the team. Hey, you want to make fun of Matt Duchene's hair on the internet for a little while so we can get traded to San Jose or Florida? That sounds like a better option to me. It's such a mess there. Why would he ever stay there?
Well, that's going to be the next question. Is, you know, I still assume that Erik Karlsson will be traded. Most people seem to assume that. Maybe not. Maybe the Mike Hoffman situation was the big one, and now that that's resolved, he's more open to staying, but I don't think it is. I think the issues in Ottawa go much deeper, and I think it's certainly not a good sign that the Senators seem to keep putting this message out there that they are waiting until July 1st to negotiate and make an offer, when, of course, as we know, based on Oliver Ekman-Larsson verbally agreeing to a deal, they could be having those conversations anytime. If I'm a Senators fan, every time I hear anyone in the organization or in the media suggests that they have to wait till July 1st to talk to Erik Karlsson, that makes me very nervous, because it's not true, and I would want to know why somebody was putting that out there. But even, you know, once Erik Karlsson, if he is traded, once that happens, what happens with Mark Stone? He's a free agent. He doesn't have a contract with this team. He's not unrestricted. He can't go wherever he wants, but he doesn't have a contract. Matt Duchene needs an extension starting on July 1st, you know, he's in the same boat as Erik Karlsson. Does he want to come back? Remember, this guy forced his way out of Colorado because he wanted to win and he wanted to get back to the playoffs. you know, if he was willing to do that to a team he had spent, six years with, why would we assume he wouldn't do it to a team that he had spent 6 months with? You know, the number of scenarios here that are in play for the Senators and the percentage of those that are not good is pretty upsetting if you're a Sens fan. I mean, I saw somebody point out, like, we literally could be in a situation roughly a year from now in which Matt Duchene is about to leave Ottawa as an unrestricted free agent. He's about to walk away for nothing because his contract's up at the end of next season, at the same moment when the Colorado Avalanche are using the Ottawa Senators draft pick that they gave up for Matt Duchene, which could be, I mean, it could be the first overall pick. That could be Jack Hughes right there. So I mean, there's a million different ways we could discuss this. Virtually none of them are good for Ottawa, unless Mike Hoffman was the problem with Erik Karlsson, and now that he's gone, Karlsson says, okay, I'm ready to talk. Let's sit down and work out an extension, and then maybe the rest of this falls into place. Maybe.
I don't know, man. Like, with the Mark Stone thing, like, I would be afraid of having the Shea Weber thing happen where he's so desperate to get out that, you know, he comes up with some crazy RFA contract that's heavily front-loaded or something, and he thinks he's going to get out, and then next thing you know,
if there has ever been locked in. A player that seems like a offer sheet target in the making, Mark Stone would be the guy. And I know he has to sign it, and I know we just don't do offer sheets in this league anymore, but, you know, star player, rebuilding team with financial problems, that is the exact situation that you would take a swing at. So,
but if they don't sign Erik Karlsson, they're going to have a ton of money to actually spend. Not like a ton of money in terms of like spending to the cap, but they're going to have more money now than, because
they'll have money. Yeah. Right. And they have an owner who would probably view that as some sort of, you know, affront to his manhood and have to match the offer. So I'm not saying I think it would work, but I don't know.
But
and I know other people have mentioned this, if you're the Colorado Avalanche, why wouldn't you offer sheet Mark Stone? Knowing that whether you get him and get him out of Ottawa, or whether you force Ottawa to pay more than they want, you're weakening the Senators and you own their first round pick. I don't think any of that will happen. What do you do if you're the Senators now with that fourth overall pick in this year's draft?
Well, because the deal is that they could give it back, right? Because
they owe the Avalanche either this year's first round pick, which we know is going to be fourth overall, or next year's first round pick, which could be anywhere.
I mean, I wouldn't say anywhere, probably somewhere between 1, 2, and 3.
Well, but that's the thing. It won't be, because even if you think the Senators are going to be the worst team in the league next year, and I mean, hopefully what happened this year with Colorado and Vegas and New Jersey, and I mean, that should have dissuaded us from thinking we can authoritatively say a team's going to be bad. Even if you think they're going to finish dead last, the odds are still that they will pick fourth overall because of the way the lottery works. They'll drop three spots. Lottery. It's like a 55% chance, let alone if they just win a couple of extra games, move up even a couple of spots. You know, the chances of that being a top three pick are definitely less than 50%, and they get smaller the further up the standings they go.
You see, like, but this is another reason why you would think they'd want to handle the Erik Karlsson thing as soon as possible, because if they know they're not going to have Erik Karlsson before the draft and they're going to be an Erik Karlsson-less team at the start of next year, you may as well just say, all right, well, we're going to for sure be one of the two worst teams in the league next year. Maybe we give up the fourth pick now. But at the same time, though, like, Pierre Dorion, if he's the kind of guy who says, I don't want to trade within my division, I want to limit my marketplace to 24 teams instead of all 31, or 30, obviously, he probably seems like the kind of guy who doesn't want to, you know, quote, send the message to the team that we're going to be bad next year. Yep. I don't want, and that's the dumbest thing to do.
Well,
like, you need to
be
realistic.
You know what? It's not just sending the message to the team, it's sending a message to the fans. I mean, I don't know how you sell season tickets today in Ottawa, let alone how do you do it
right
if it's your over. Team has just said there's a really good chance we're going to finish dead last. And that's always been the question in Ottawa. People outside the city might not realize it. This is a decent hockey town, but we've had other sports here. We've had other leagues that have not gone well. We had a AAA baseball team, won a championship in the mid-90s.
The Lynx, right?
The Lynx, the Ottawa Lynx. Yeah. They were had good attendance. It was a big success. Then the team wasn't good anymore, and the fans stopped coming, and the team left. We have a CFL team, Canadian Football League here, has done well. They won a championship, and that it's going well, and people are on board right now. But this city has lost two other CFL teams in the past, partly because they were terribly managed, but also partly because they weren't very good. And there's always been this concern that in Ottawa, the fans are there for you, win or draw. And that when you start losing, the fans check out. And we've never really tested that with the Senators, because the Senators haven't been this bad since the mid-90s when they were an expansion team and they were terrible for 4 or 5 years. And ever since, they've been either a playoff team or at least kind of in that playoff hunt. They've never had the sort of season that people seem to think they might have next year and that they did have this year. There's, a lot of concern that when people say, blow it all up and refocus on 2020. I don't know.
But it's not even blowing
Eugene
it up.
They're going to do that?
They almost have no choice. It's not as though it's an active choice to blow it up. Like once the Hoffman thing happened, he was gone. Eric Carlson was probably going to be gone either way, whether or not Mike Hoffman and his girlfriend were good people or crazy cyber bulliers, whichever one of those two people they actually are. Like those two guys are probably going to be gone. And once those two guys are gone, Matt Duchene's got to say to himself, well, apparently the most important thing in the world for a hockey player is to live 3 hours from the town he grew up in when he was 14 years old as a 27-year-old man. That's a really important thing. But maybe it's not as important when the team you're on is going to be super duper bad for the next 2-3 years. Yeah. So also, by the way, people care whether or not a minor league baseball team is good. I figured you just go because it's cheap and it's fun and it's baseball. Like I've never been to a minor league game where I was like, is this team good?
It turns out that the number of people in Ottawa who will go just because it's fun and cheap is not enough to keep
interesting town. But the Senators to me, like people got mad and I was like, just let them relocate. And people were like, oh yeah, that's really going to solve their problems. Like, no, it's not going to solve their problems. It's going to solve your problems, because you're not going to have to care about this team that does not care the least about you, with an owner that absolutely just despises your existence, who just sees you as a big organ donation pool. And the second he gets the organ, says, well, we're like a McDonald's. We're going to have to relocate if we don't get more people buying cheeseburgers. Like, no, screw that guy. Like, let him go. Like, let something else enter your life. If it's that miserable and it's going to be that bad and they don't have any interest in, building a good team for whatever reason, whether it's the debt that's been there forever or whether it's just an owner that's bitter and doesn't want to spend any money. Like it's okay. The Red Blacks, they won the CFL title this year. Is that true? I didn't realize that. Go to those games. That's fun. There's Rouges and there's Downs, right? There's like two Downs or something. I don't know how Canadian football works, but it seems like it's more fun than going to an Ottawa Senators game is all I'm saying.
These days it probably is. And that's the thing, like you look at the last year in Ottawa, you had Melnyk saying he might move the team. You had the team face planning and being terrible. You had the Hoffman Carlson situation.
So much stuff.
You got the Randy Lee situation.
The AGM, yeah, Randy
really
Lee.
Talked about, all of this stuff. And, on the surface, none of this stuff is related. Like, these are all separate incidents, and one doesn't have to do with the other, but they all kind of fall back under that situation of Eugene Melnyk getting up in front of the media.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't cornered. He wasn't taken out of context. He was in a media scrum and saying, I might move the team. And it was, anything else, maybe not all of it together, but any of the rest of the stuff individually, as bad as it all is, if the Melnyk thing hadn't happened, fans will always want to give their hometown team the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
And they will bend over backwards to excuse things. They will bend over backwards to look on the positive side of things. And what I think people need to understand is in Ottawa, like, Melnyk's comments just torpedoed that trust and that benefit of the doubt to the point where when other things start going wrong, you really don't see many of those Senator fans who, can just always put on the rose-colored glasses and find the positive in anything. They're not out there because they don't, they feel like this team kind of kicked them in the gut, so they're not looking to help out. So I don't know. I mean, I'm really fascinated by the situation with the draft pick. I really want to see what they do, because they've basically got three options. Number one is you just take this pick, you use it. It's a top four pick. It's probably, you know, going to be a better pick than next year's, although not necessarily. Take it, draft somebody good, put that person in the lineup, sell some tickets that way, and hope for the best next year. That's option number one. Option two is you bite the bullet. You do what I think Elliot Friedman suggested this week, which is you say, you know, we're just going to pay the piper now. We want this over with. We're trying to start fresh. That means we give up this year's pick and we take next year's, even knowing that it might be a worse pick. Option three, which is the one that not a lot of people are talking about, but I think might be the most realistic one.
Blow up the team and don't have a team anymore, so you can't have the pick.
No? And then option four. And the other option is you go back to Colorado and say, let's work out a deal. Let's figure out a way that we can, you know, that we can make this work, which is either, you know, there's different scenarios. You could say, for example, you know, Pierre Dorion could call up Joe Sack and say, look, this year's pick is number four. Next year's pick, we don't know what it's going to be. It's probably going to be number four or later. This year's pick has more value, if only because it's right now. Make it worth my while to give you this pick. You know, give me something. Cough up a draft pick. Give me something that I can go back to my owner and my fans and look like I got something to give you this pick, and then we wash our hands of it and it's done.
Like when Canada negotiates with the U.S. on that episode of South Park when, like, Canada goes on strike. You ever see that episode?
It's exactly like that.
That's what I'm thinking.
It would be exactly...
But like, if you're Colorado though, like, don't you want to not be bothered by this at this point? Don't you have other things going on in your life? You're like, well, we made a trade. Leave me alone.
Maybe not. And maybe you just, but I mean, to me, if you're Joe Sakic, you're going to listen. You're going to say, okay, well, what is it? You know, I know I've got these guys over the barrel, so to speak. So, you know, what can I do? Because the other situation that, and I sort of threw this out on Twitter today was, you know, if you're Pierre Dorion, you go to Joe Sakic and say, okay, I'm keeping this year's pick. I'm giving you next year's pick, but I want to buy lottery insurance on that pick in case it ends up being a top three pick. What would it cost me right now to buy insurance that says if that ends up being a top three pick, you get the 2020 pick instead? And I'll tell you right now, it wouldn't be cheap, because this is like buying car insurance after you've already wrecked the car. You haven't taken it to the mechanic. You don't know whether it's totaled or whether it's salvageable, but it's bad. So it's not, you know, you're not getting, you know, Joe Sakic isn't going to give you insurance for a seventh round pick. It's going to cost you something,
right?
And something that's going to hurt. And it's going to be a situation where you might have to give that something up, and then the pick ends up being number six and you gave up something for literally nothing at all other than insurance and peace of mind. But I think that's a scenario where, you know, it at least avoids the worst case scenario of going through a terrible year next year, knowing you don't have your first round pick and knowing that you've literally got nothing to look forward to at the end of that road. Because I've done that as a Leaf fan more than a few times, and it sucks. And it's the worst way to go through a season.
Like, to be as bad as Ottawa is probably going to be next year and not have the pick to look forward to.
Yeah. So you say, why would Colorado do it? It's kind of like, you know, to my mind, it's basically like hedging your bet. It's like if you've got a Vegas betting slip where you bet on some terrible team to win a championship, and then halfway through the season they're doing better than expected, you know, you can just ride that and hope you win the jackpot, or you can start hedging against that bet to make sure you get something so that you're going to come out ahead, you know. And again, what would it be worth? That's what's kind of fascinating to me, because I don't know what that sort of insurance costs. I know what a third line winger costs in this league. I know what renting, you know, a second line center for the playoff run costs. Like, we have established prices for those. I don't know what it would cost to work out, you know, buying insurance on a pick that you owe to some other team. I have no idea, but I think it would be really interesting to see them try. And you're right. The chances are Colorado says, you know what? No, or we're going to make it so ridiculous it's not going to be worth your while. But I do think there are scenarios there that could actually work for both of those teams, where Colorado gets something in their pocket right now, potentially, you know, still get something very good down the line, and Ottawa gets a little bit of peace of mind that at the very least they can sell back to the fan base. Because the other piece of this is, you know, we're looking at this as, well, what should the Senators do? What's best for the Senators? Pierre Dorion has to look at what's best for the Senators, but also what's best for Pierre Dorion. Because if Pierre Dorion gets fired, because this all goes completely belly up, I don't think there's a long lineup of teams looking to hand him a GM's job right away. I don't think this is a Lou Lamoriello situation where someone's jumping right in. So
Pierre Dorion, aren't you the guy that called and tried to subscribe to AAA after his car broke down on the side of the road? Well, yeah, I thought that would be the great way to go about fixing the car for free, you know, because it's I didn't realize the car was going to break down. I think if I'm Ottawa, I like the idea of just letting them take the fourth pick. This way, yeah, like maybe the pick ends up being worse next year. Maybe you wind up picking fifth or sixth, but you're right. Because of the lottery, you can't really insure anything. And
you
have to know you're going to be bad next year. So you want to give your fans at least, when Buffalo is bad, fans could cheer for losses, for tanking, because they were going after Connor McDavid. Like, if you don't even
Avalanche can finish with 95 points or whatever it was, and the Vegas Golden Knights can go to the Stanley Cup, like, anyone who says the Senators are definitely going to be bad next year, like, I don't...
I'm not willing to, like, to completely abandon everything.
Can we really rule out
outlier,
that the Senators that the Senators finish, like, 25th overall next year? You know, that there's five teams worse than them or six teams worse than them. They finish 25th. A couple of teams pass them in the lottery, and now they're holding the ninth pick, you know? Like,
or it could go the other way. Gambling, baby. Let's gamble next year.
That's it.
Gambling.
It's a gamble. See, what are you gambling with?
That's why I don't like the hedging. What does it cost you if you lose? The only time I'm willing to hedge is if, like, let's say I do like a three-team parlay and I hit the first two teams. Like, if there's a way to hedge the third game where I guarantee some money, I'll do it. But like, if I'm going long haul, if I'm saying Vegas is going to win the cup and here's $100, like, maybe I'll hedge in the Stanley Cup final, but I won't do it until I have to.
You certainly would hope that. Well, but that's the thing, you don't know when you have to, right? I mean, if I had a Vegas to win the cup at 100-1, I would have been looking to hedge that as soon as I got in the playoffs, you know, and maybe a little more each round. And I probably, and, you know, if I had done that, I would have wound up ahead of the guy who said, no, I'm going to ride it all the way and watch him try to win the Stanley Cup. I don't know. I mean, it's a no-lose situation for Colorado, and that's obvious. I guess the other point we should mention, I mean, even though this is a Senators podcast, is just to recognize how beautifully this worked out for Doug Wilson and the Sharks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
They're in a good spot.
Frank Saravelli tweeted it. He's, Doug Wilson trades Mikkel Bodker and a sixth-round pick, and he gets a second, a fourth, two fifths, $4 million in cap space, and $6 million in actual dollar savings. All of that for Mikkel Bodker, who he may not have wanted. Like, he may have been happy. He may have viewed taking him off the roster as an asset. I'll tell you, as a Leafs fan, I was, when the first trade went down, I was happy because the Sharks have got all this cap space. And I was like, good, spend it on something that's not John Tavares or whoever else, or Joe Thornton. Or now they've got even more cap space. They're loading up for something.
I'll tell you right now, if John Tavares, because I saw this, I think it was last week, about how John Tavares has been negotiating with the Islanders every day for like the last week or whatever. I swear to God, if he signs before he gets to free agency and can look around at other teams, like, just let's just end free agency. Let's just stop having it, because what's the point then? If John Tavares, of all people, who is going to be the bell of the ball, is that still a thing people say? Does anyone know what a ball is? I don't know. If you're going to be the something of the thing that's really coveted, you need to go. You need to go check it out for yourself. Yep. You need to be like, hey, what's going on? Like, oh, maybe you just come in and get like if you're like a top recruit and you just go to your state school, like, you're an idiot. You need to go see what Notre Dame and USC and all these schools have. Like, John Tavares is that guy now. He needs to see if San Jose's got something.
There's no reason for him to not at least do a Stamkos and just, I mean, it's, we're what, a week away. You know, because it's the 5 days before July 1 where teams can talk. I can't imagine why you wouldn't. It's got to be fascinating because I'm sure he's like, you know, you got to be dodging Lou Lamoriello's calls, and his agent's probably like, go camping this weekend, man. You need to be off the grid so that I can plausibly tell them that you can't be reached so that we can get to that point. And then, you know what? Go into those meetings with Toronto and San Jose and whoever else with all the details of the Islanders offer in your mind, And yeah, maybe you pull a Stamkos, and after you've seen what's out there, you go, nope, I'm happy where I'm at. But yeah, I would agree. If he signs now...
Oh, boy. Don't do it.
You know, because really, what's the scenario where that makes sense? The only way that makes sense is if Lou Lamoriello makes him some crazy offer and says, this offer expires tomorrow.
Right.
But if he does that, okay, so now you're playing hardball with me? Like,
I know.
This is how you're going to get me to stay? Like, he's got all the cards, so.
He has no leverage. Lou has no, like, and imagine, like, you're Barry Trotz. All you're doing is just, like, leaving voicemails on John Tavares' phone. Hey, what's up? Barry again. Just checking in to see what you're thinking. No pressure. Yep. Just give me a call back anytime. I'll be at a hotel in Newark for the next 11 days. All right, see ya. Bye.
All right. We should get to Barry Trotz. So do you want to do the break now and then we'll...
Yeah, let's break. Let's break. We'll come back. We'll do Barry Trotz. We'll do Alex Galchenyuk for Maximus Adomi. And of course, we'll get to the Sedins before the show's over. And stay tuned. We're coming back in like 2 seconds.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we're back. And Mike Hoffman has been traded 3 more times since we took the commercial break. He's
back
now
in
playing in Germany. He's now the German league's number one goaltender, playing for the Dusseldorf Hasselhoffs. So congratulations to that team over there. You got yourself a really good player. But here stateside, I'm surprised about the Barry Trotz thing, only in that the Caps weren't willing to pay him the reported 5 years, $5 million thing, because... I don't know. Like, I just...
Yeah, but they got their guy. I mean, they were... Brian McClellan had made his mind up, I think, that he was making this change.
Oh, a year ago.
Oh, yeah. So, for sure. It was all set up. So, but yeah, this is the... And we should just... If people didn't hear the story, that, you know, it's not... It's... The surprise here isn't that Barry Trotz resigned. It's that Barry Trotz could resign. Because we thought his contract was up, or was going to be up on July 1st. Which would basically make him a free agent. But then we come to find out that all along there had been this secret extension that if the Capitals won the Cup, he got 2 more years at a rate that it turned out was not very good. It was probably, you know, I guess he must have signed this 4 years ago. This is before Babcock and Quenneville and everyone bumped the salary scale up. So he doesn't like that, you know, he's now locked in for 2 more years at this contract, and in theory the Capitals could hold him to that, but he wants to move on, they want to move on. But I guess he went back to them and said, no, I want Joel Quenneville type money, and they said no, because we've got Todd Reardon ready to take over, and off you go. So now Barry Trotz is a free agent in a league where there's only one coaching vacancy, but
for now
because
at 4 o'clock, today, there's going to be 3 coaches fired, and we're going to have to come. Sorry, guys, podcast is up. We missed the John Cooper firing. We missed the Pete DeBoer firing. We're sorry. Just assume we like those moves.
Does he go to the Islanders? Is the simple answer the right one?
That's weird, because of all the teams in the league, the Islanders were the ones that were the cheapest with their coach, because they paid, Doug Weight, I'm assuming, wasn't really getting too much money. Jack Capuano was reportedly the lowest paid coach in the league. So that's an organization that's not really known for ponying up the bucks for a coach. And at the same time, though, Barry Trotz, I understand that you don't want to maybe be married to a coach for 5 years in the cap situation where, you know, by the time that contract's up, Ovechkin's, whatever, 37, same thing, Backstrom, everyone's going to be older. But if you're a coach and for the last 4 years you've won 2 President's Trophies, you get the most wins, most points of any coach the last 4 years, and you won the Stanley Cup the final year of your contract, or the 4th year of the potential 6-year deal, but in what becomes the final year of the contract, I just... to me, if imagine if before the year, instead of being in love with Todd Reardon, the Caps were like, look, you've done a great job here these first 3 years. We don't blame you for these second round losses. We know you're one of the best coaches out there. Let's give you a 4-year, $16 million extension. I mean, he would take that, right? Like Barry Trotz wouldn't have thought twice about that sort of deal, right? And now, once he adds the Stanley Cup to it, they still don't want him. They just feel Todd Reardon's the guy. I don't know. I feel like maybe you wanted to kind of adjust to your mindset once you saw what happened here the fourth year of the deal. But I don't know, man. If I'm Barry Trotz, I get it. Like you don't want to, you know, be super underpaid in the place where you just won the Stanley Cup. But are you just going to go to the Islanders out of spite because it's the only opening? Or are you going to wait a full year
that's
now?
It. I get why Trotz would walk away, especially if he felt like,
for sure,
you know, they were fine. You know, it's kind of that thing where you're leaving your spouse and you're at the door with the bags packed going like, that's it. I'm gone unless you talk me out of this. And they're like, all right, but don't forget your umbrella. Like they're not trying very hard to keep you. So
both sides checked out mentally a year ago. Like, I get it. Totally get it.
But then you know, to leave that and immediately move in with, like, I don't know, the Islanders.
When John Tavares is moving out like 2 days later.
Well, that's it. You know, it's this fun situation where if you're Lou Lamoriello, you're probably, you know, I'm assuming that at the very least the Islanders are making an offer to Barry Trotz. I feel like that's pretty safe assumption. You want him to take it soon. You want him to take it ASAP because that's going to be your sign to John Tavares that you're serious about turning this around. But if you're Barry Trotz, you're kind of like, I would like to see what John Tavares is going to do first, because I don't feel like the Islanders, even with John Tavares, are one of the most attractive jobs in the league. And without him, I mean, there's got to be something else opening up. Or maybe you just go, you know what? I'm going to take my cup ring and I'm going to go on vacation for a little while and check back in halfway through the season, and maybe we'll get a coach fired during the season this year. I don't know.
Is there a team right now that would pull the Bruce Boudreau, you know, immediate firing to hire Bruce Boudreau kind of a thing? Like, I'm trying to think of a team that would do it. And I've turned on John Cooper for sure. So obviously I think that's what Tampa should do. But
obviously, like, the team that would pull the Bruce Boudreau move would be the team that has Bruce Boudreau right now.
But that's not a great
Minnesota
spot either.
New GM.
What else? Who else could it be? Nashville? I mean, would you fire Peter Laviolette at this point?
No.
Is Barry Trotz getting you over the hump back home in Nashville again? Yeah, no. You can't do that. Yeah, like
there's other ones, I'm sure. Yeah, there's probably going to be other. And I mean, again, and this is kind of where that weird hockey loyalty of, well, you know, we got this new coach. It's only been a year. Yeah. Do you, you know, if you're the Sabres, are you going to write out the Phil Housley thing? Or do you say, you know what, we're going to bring him? Or do you even go to Phil Housley and say, hey, Phil, remember when you were an assistant under Barry Trotz in Nashville? Guess what? We need you to do that again. And we're going to keep paying you because Terry Pegula's got all the money. So we'll pay you your head coach salary. But
I like it.
We need you to move aside. I don't know. There's any number of, does Detroit need a second pool boy? Maybe we can, just a coaching all-stars, just the entire, reassemble like the Team Canada coaches behind Jeff Blaisdell.
Dan Bosman and Barry Trotz shirtless and just cleaning the pool with the little net thing there. Like, hey Jeff, how's it going? You look tired. Why don't you go inside? Let me and Dan work out here. Don't worry. Everything's going to be good.
Did we tell you practice was at 10? No, it was at 9. Sorry. We've already been putting the finishing touches on this power play. We'll catch you up. So, that was.
I wouldn't go to the Islanders if I'm Barry Trotz. I would hold out and see if anyone's willing to guillotine one of their current coaches. By the way, this is completely off topic, but I was just looking over stuff for the buyout period. If Tampa buys out Dan Girardi and Ryan Callahan, because they have 2 years left on their deals, they will save approximately $5 million on the cap this year and I think $2 million next year, and then they'll be $1.5 in dead money 3 years from now. So just hypothetically, if you're looking to create some John Tavares room, that could be a way to go. I'm just saying.
Honestly, one thing we are learning as we go in this kind of cap era, because I feel like almost the first 10 years of the cap era, like, nobody had really figured it out, but as teams are figuring it out, like, it is easier to make cap room and easier to get out of contracts than than we think. Yeah. Like, I'm having to sort of revisit some of my assumptions around who's untradeable. And, you know, you look at certain teams and you go, wow, you guys are screwed for the next 5 years on the cap. And it's like, are they?
Yeah, not really.
You know, 2 years later, you're like, oh, they, look at that. They wriggled out of it. So,
like, if you told me, if you told me I could have $5 million in cap space this year, my punishment would be 3 years from now having 1.5 in dead space. Like, who knows what the cap's going to be in 3 years? Like, 1.5 million might be nothing. I wouldn't worry about that 3 years from now. I'm a cup team. I got to worry because Tampa has to, not has to, but they're going to lose. What was it again? Ryan McDonough, Anton Strahlman, they're both going to be UFAs. They're going to have to sign Yanni Gourde. They're going to have to sign Nikita Kucherov. Like, they've got some key guys they got to sign. So it's not that the window closes.
This is coming
after
up,
this
like
year.
In like next year,
yeah,
and beyond.
Yeah, right? Like this they're going to be in some hot water next summer. So you may as well go all in and get rid of the $6 million or the $5 million guy or the $6 million guy that's got 4 goals and maybe not use him constantly in the playoffs next year. I'm so mad about how Tampa blew. I don't think Tampa blowing it this year is getting enough coverage because everyone's so like, oh, it's the Caps year, Ovechkin. Yeah, but it probably shouldn't have been if John Cooper was managing his minutes properly and Steve Eiserman wasn't throwing money at Dan Girardi. But I'm over it. Yeah. I'm not even a Tampa fan. I'm over it. I'm fine. I'm good.
Okay, good. I'm glad. The other thing that's kind of related to that I guess we should just briefly mention, because we've talked to Tavares a few times, but there was Bob McKenzie tweeted out this week that if John Tavares does make it to free agency, that and presumably the Leafs would be one of the teams he might talk to, that he had some insight into what that approach might look like. And the most interesting thing he said was that, I don't have the tweet in front of me, I don't know his exact words, but he basically suggested that the Leafs might be willing to put something creative on the table.
I love that.
Which is interesting because,
like, a painting,
the way NHL
or
contracts
like a
work,
poem or a book.
There's not, like, you know, I'm thinking a cake maybe, but no, the way NHL contracts work, there's not a lot of room for creativity. Like, you can't, you know, they're called, you know, standard player contracts. They're pretty standard. There isn't, you know, and a lot of the things you do, you know, front loading a contract to me isn't creative. That's pretty much business as usual. Putting bonuses in, That's standard, you know, no trade clauses in that. That's standard stuff. So you're kind of left going, well, what would he mean by creative? And this being Bob McKenzie, I mean, he's not going to just pull this out of nowhere. He must have heard from somebody that this could be being worked on. And the one thing that comes to mind when you hear about a creative offer is, could we actually see what we've talked about a few times in recent shows, which is somebody offering the 1 year max deal? $16 million, come play for the Toronto. I mean, the Leafs would be the perfect team to do it because they've got the cap room for one more year.
Right.
Come play in Toronto, max deal, 16 years, or sorry, 1 year, $16 million. You get,
that'd be creative.
That would be creative. Yeah, we're gonna sign you to a deal that is not allowed under the CBA. We're creative.
It's not 16 years. It's 2 year deals. It's not 16.
Damn millennials just refuse to respect the rules. No, they offer him the 1 year, and, you know, and then you wonder, okay, well, what comes with that? Is it come here for 1 year, let's try to win a cup, and then you go into free agency again as the highest paid player ever? Is it come to Toronto for 1 year and see how you like it, and if you're enjoying it, we talk extension halfway through the season? Or is it come to Toronto, sign for 1 year, and wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we've also got an 8 year deal to come after that at a lower cap hit, which would be blatant cap circumvention, but
who cares?
It'd be creative.
That would be creative. That would be a new form of cap circumvention we haven't seen. So that is creative. I would define.
I would like to see something like that from somebody. And I think, you know, the Leafs are the team that it makes the most sense for. I don't know. You know, does it make sense to do that if you're Tavares? I mean, we've talked about it. You make more money that way, but, you know, is that, and, you know, and it's the LeBron James approach. And if it's good for LeBron, you think it would be good for NHL players, but maybe not. He might just say, you know what, like, it's quite possible John Tavares right now is sitting here dealing with Lou Lamoriello and dealing and going, you know what, I hate this. I hate every second of this. I want it to go away.
Yeah,
I'm never doing this again. Get me in. I don't care where I sign. I want the maximum amount of time, and I don't want to deal with this again for 7 years. So
I'm sure the Islanders would probably trade him to whoever was going to sign him to get the 8th year out of it so they can get like a fifth round pick or something. But yeah.
Well, would they? If it's Toronto?
Yeah.
Lou Lamoriello wants to
yeah, that's true too.
Help John Tavares and the Toronto Maple Leafs in one shot.
Do you think the front office has been just like letting their hair grow the last 3 weeks? Like no one's gotten a shave or a haircut in like a month. Like Kyle Dubas is just like a completely like a hippie right now. Just hair's hippies. All grown.
I don't know if Kyle Dubas could grow a beard, but
I don't know. He's got some thick locks up top. Maybe.
Did you see his Calder Cup celebration with when the Toronto Marlies won?
Yeah, he was pretty pumped. He was pretty jazzed.
A solid celebration. He's all right. It's not Ovechkin. I didn't see him swimming in a fountain or anything, but.
I mean, yeah, he might have been doing like some push-ups in like the Texas area after the game, like in some ponds or something. It's hot in Texas. It's like 98 degrees. I'm going to Dallas in 2 days. Like I've been checking the weather all week. I'm too pale, man. I'm gonna melt. I'm gonna die in Texas over the weekend for the draft.
Going to Dallas for the NHL draft.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I saw
you tweeted something about doing a live podcast, so I didn't even know about that. But I guess I got to go down two now, and that's
oh.
So I booked my flight. It was non-refundable, but it was. Anyways, hey, the hell? You only live once, right?
Yeah, no worries. I'll see you there. I'll let you know where to show up.
Great,
for sure.
You'll pick me up at the airport, right?
Yeah, just stand. I have a place called Uber, so just stand by the thing that says Uber, okay. And I'll just roll up and I'll definitely get you and bring you to our live show in Dallas.
All right, we got 10 minutes left here. How's this for a segue? We just finished talking about John Tavares signing a $16 million deal. Speaking of max deals.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Montreal Canadiens. Domi money.
Max Domi for Alexander Galchenyuk. One for one deal. No retained salary, nothing. Old-fashioned hockey trade, kind of.
Old-fashioned bad hockey trade for the Montreal Canadiens, baby.
Not good reviews for Montreal.
I just... Like I'm just so like I cannot wait for like July 3rd when I can just kind of shut down hockey for a couple of weeks and just put my feet up and not think about hockey because it's the most exhausting sport to think about because like I understand that like you know like Garth Snow got fired right and he was there forever and he made some moves and you know you can see the logic in some of the moves that didn't work out and maybe he was handcuffed for a while there because ownership wasn't spending money and so maybe his record could have been better but then there's like some GMs like Dale Talon and like Mark Bergevin and like they make these moves that are just so bad that everybody knows the moves are bad at the moment and they work out bad. They don't it's not as though Mark Bergevin like saw an opening that no one else saw and like, oh, Shea Weber had 61 goals last year. Who knew that was gonna like no, it's obviously bad and it's bad. And he keeps making these deals and no one's stopping him. I don't understand how he's allowed to still make these trades.
The thing that gets me with Mark Bergevin is it feels like he keeps talking himself into having to trade guys.
Yeah.
Like he just decides I gotta move PK Subban and then he does the best he can, but you know, he gets 80 cents on the dollar or whatever it is, which you do that enough times, it doesn't really work out. I mean, he's a little bit younger, not enough that it would really make a difference, but he's cheaper and he's under team control for another extra 2 years. So there's a benefit in that sense. If Domi is almost as good as Galchenyuk, then the deal probably works out for Montreal. It's one of those things. He's freeing up cap space. Who knows what he's going to do with the cap space? If we're sitting here 2 weeks from now, he just signed John Tavares, we're going to say, oh, that was brilliant because he managed to shave off enough space to go out and get his number one center. But if he just has gone out and got four more Jordy Bens, then I don't know.
Bens.
it's what's crazy to me is the Canadians keep trading guys and they never get a center back.
Nope.
They keep
never.
You know, that's, and they've needed this for years. Everybody's said number one center, and they, you know, Subban was a different situation, but everybody said, would you trade Mikhail Sergachev for a number one center? No, we're not going to move him. We're not going to move. Oh, we just traded him, but it was for a winger or a guy who is certainly not a proven center in Jonathan Drouin. And now here's another one, Alex Galchenyuk. Will you play him at center? No, we won't play him at center. Would you trade him for a center? Maybe. Oh, we just traded him for another unproven guy who might be able to play center but is probably a wing, and now we're going to go down the road with Max Pacioretty presumably and do the same.
It's great,
the same dance.
It's so great. It's just so,
and every time Mark Bergeron picks up the phone for Max Pacioretty, everyone's going to say, well, we just saw a 30 goal scorer winger get traded for Mikhail Bodker, so
Yeah, but they, nobody can apply that to the Max Pacioretty situation, right? Because that's just too different. Like, Max Pacioretty's girlfriend or wife isn't like harassing
her. If I got Mark Bergevin on the other end of the phone, I'm trying pretty much anything. I'm not ruling anything out.
And by the way, they could have gotten a center for P.K. Subban if they wanted to. They could have gotten anything they wanted for P.K. Subban. They chose to get Shea Weber. You can't tell me there was no market for P.K. Subban 2 years ago. It's insane. God.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's the terrible deal that some are making it out to be, but yeah, it's...
It reminds me of the Taylor, not in terms of quality, but it reminds me of the Taylor Hall, Adam Larson trade, where at the time we all knew it was bad, but like I thought it could work out in a way where obviously you'd always want Taylor Hall over Adam Larson, but maybe like in a way it kind of did, where the Oilers were good for 1 year with Larson, even though it really wasn't Adam Larson, where you can kind of rationalize like, hey, that was a piece we needed for blah, blah, blah. We need defensemen. But here, there's not even that. There's not even like that, right. we're desperate for wingers situation.
The Oilers made a bad trade that they probably felt like they had to make because they needed a defenseman. It'd be like if they traded Taylor Hall and they're like, we didn't want to give up Taylor Hall, but everybody has known for years we needed a defenseman. And you're like, but the guy you just traded for is a goalie. And they're like, oh yeah. Well, it's close. That was close. But he might be able to play defense. Who knows?
It's like a it's like a defenseman in big pads. It's even better than a defenseman. It's great. It's a great.
So I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Pacioretty and whether he does get traded, whether what they can kind of value they can get. But I mean, obviously Galchenyuk had worn his out his welcome. I'm not saying you don't trade him if you've made up your mind. I mean, obviously there's lots of stuff internally goes on in organizations we don't know about, but I don't know. And they sure stuck a knife in him on the way out too.
Oh yeah.
With the comments about, yeah, you know, you have to
want
to work
it.
And
you have to want to play center. You have to want to work at it. Boy, fuck. That's just an unbelievable situation in Montreal, man. Like, I just, God. But like, I mean, I don't necessarily, to just put a cap on it, I don't necessarily feel like Arizona is the place that's guaranteed to have a guy work out in a trade based on what they've done the last couple of years. It's not like Nick Chalmerson went there and suddenly became like as good as he was in Chicago or better. He's been kind of worse. You know, Alex Goligoski hasn't done anything since they got him. Like, it's not like Arizona is this like hotbed for like talented players to come there and get better or like realize their potential. But I'd rather have Galchenyuk every day of the week. So,
what is it? The Atlantic Division, man. If the Tampa Bay Lightning can't win a cup in this division, you're going up against Montreal, Ottawa, the Sabres, the Florida Panthers, like Detroit's like the fourth best run organization. Ken Holland and
is Boston really good, or is this Boston just the third best team in the division?
Or are they just the like Atlantic Division good?
Like, you ever wonder that? I was wondering that this week when I was writing something. I'm going through and I'm like, man, like there's clearly three teams that are better than the other five in this division. But like Boston, like we all thought Boston was going to be bad last year, and suddenly they kind of like stumbled into 100+ points, and like we all were just like, oh, I guess they were better than we thought. But like, were they though? I don't know. The mailbag. We have a couple minutes left. And I said during the break we were talking, and I said, we haven't talked about the draft, and the draft is this week. So I'll find the draft question in the mailbag. And there's no one wants to talk about the draft. No one has any draft questions.
Because you know why? It's because this is that beautiful part of the year. Like the draft, it's Tuesday. The draft's on Friday. That feels like months away. Like even the Barry Trotz thing was like jaw-dropping yesterday, and it already kind of feels like, eh. And by the time people hear this, something else will have happened, and they'll be like, what, Hoffman still?
I know. But like the draft is always like just the backdrop for like cool stuff to happen. There's like the first three or four picks, and then it's like trades. That's all anyone cares about. So everyone knows Dahlin's going to Buffalo, and we pretty much have the first four picks set. So unless like Montreal trades their pick or Edmonton does something, like there's no real...
There's not a lot of like drama intrigue around the draft, but it's the trades and everything and getting everyone in the same place. We got the awards tomorrow night.
Oh yeah, the awards. We never did our awards. Who cares? No one cares what we think about the awards, right?
I'll post my awards somewhere. You can come yell at me, but or they'll get posted for me because this is. I guess that'll be the one interesting thing. Will be whether in addition to seeing who wins the awards, be whether like any of those ballots actually turn out to be like the crazy ballot where you see the award and you're like, wait a second, somebody gave Mitch Marner a Selke vote, and then you can find it. You'll actually be able to find out who and go chase them.
Boy, every mailbag question, by the way, is everything we've covered already. And everyone wanted to talk about the Ottawa Senators. Of course, the Ottawa Senators podcast is going to do the Ottawa Senators stuff. Here, I'll do one question because it's kind of funny. From Adam Foreman, who goes by Abe Froman on his actual handle. If the Leafs hired actors for their promotional video for John Tavares, for those of you that don't know, apparently they're doing a promotional video like, hey, come to Toronto type thing. Adam wants to know, who would play Kyle Dubas, assuming there's actors? Who's going to play the role of Kyle Dubas?
Why would they hire actors to play people they have...
That'd be funny, though.
they have access to. Yeah, there was this report that the Leafs were doing this this video, which I assume is just going to be the Wendell Clark All Heart video from YouTube, just on a loop, like 10 times, and then Clark punches a hole in the wall and comes in holding a contract and a pen.
Sign it, brother.
And Tavares is like, I'm not actually allowed to sign till July, and Clark just bounces his head off the table and
who does Dubas look like? Who's famous? Who's like,
I don't know. You gotta like I see like two movies a year, so my pop culture database stopped growing in like 1996. So you gotta help me here.
I saw a picture of Kevin Connolly, E from Entourage, because he did the Gotti movie everyone's making fun of, and he kind of has that look a little bit because his hair's dark. But I mean, I don't know. Like let's let Jake Gyllenhaal play Kyle Dubas in the Jake Gyllenhaal's a chameleon. He can do anything. Matt Damon's a
little
too old.
Matt Damon. Matt Damon's, you hear like that, 50. Kyle?
Matt Damon's old.
He went Entourage. I gave you Matt Damon. So if you're looking for looking for someone to leak the Tavares signing to,
Jason Bateman, maybe. How about Jason Bateman? He's got a maybe. I'm just trying to think of white guys with short dark hair. That's all I'm doing. Anyone from the movie Dunkirk could be Kyle Dubas, I guess.
There you go.
All right. Well, I wish we could do more mailbag questions, but I believe we hit most of the mailbag questions for the first 58 minutes. So you should be satisfied, as Teddy KGB would say. So we'll be back next week. We'll set you up for free agency. We'll laugh about all the trades that have been made in the last 6 days, 7 days between these two podcasts. And yeah, that's all I got to say. We already pitched the live show that Sean will be there for, theoretically.
Can't wait.
That'd be great.
Yeah, you just let me know. Like, no one sent me anything on what to do, but let me know.
And yeah, Sean, pre-order Sean's book. It's still in the pre-order phase, right? You got a lot of pre-orders.
Pre-order. Oh yeah, it doesn't come out till October.
So pre-order the hell out of Sean. Come to the Dallas live show that Sean may or may not be involved in. And that's it. We'll see you next week. And thanks to Mitch, our producer, who I never thank at the end of the show, so I think I should. He's great and he's awesome. And he does a lot of good stuff to hook us up. And that's it. That's it. I'm done. I'm done selling everything. Goodbye.
It's gonna
and
be great.
See you in a week.
Enjoy the week. It's going to be crazy. Should be fun. Talk to you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Getting caught in the wrong shoes can interrupt your plans for the day. Like when that 10% chance of rain ends up looking more like 100%. When the transition to fall and winter feels more like experiencing every season on the same day, there's the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Cross off errands with the splash protection on the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with all-condition traction and reflective details on the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Mud Guard on the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. allbirds.com, code FRESHSOCKS.